Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We've got Al's Brothers Power Rankings coming up later in the hour. And Al's Brother is going to bring in multiple sports as a part of this picture.
Is he capable of that type of stuff?
I believe he is. I mean, no one knows the NFL and the draft better than Al's brother.
Yeah, sure.
So he's well-versed in that. And obviously he's got the NHL covered, baseball, basketball, any team sport. We're going to list the top seven most dominant athletes in North American team sports.
He's going to have one person on there that you are just going to shake your head. The Perry are going to shake your head and say that's just a joke. That's a flat-out joke.
Yeah. I think it's coming. I'm curious who he's going to have in there. I think McDavid's got to be one. Trout would have to be one. I think Mahomes, maybe Aaron
LeBron,
Donald.
LeBron.
Is LeBron still in there? I don't know if he is anymore.
Like, dude, he won the championship last year. Come on.
Yeah, he did. But is he, as of today, the guy's not even playing. He's dealing with a bum ankle. And
I say he throws Steph Curry in there.
I thought he would go off the board and say your buddy Tom Brady. That's all he does is win.
He could. Absolutely.
What about Otani? Does Otani go in there?
We'll find out in about 25 minutes. Al's brother, you know, he's going to enlighten us in terms of what he's thinking. So we'll get his take on that a little bit later on. And I wonder if he's a horse racing guy. I feel like Al's brother's a degenerate and would probably, you know, like Fort Erie's got a track, right? It's probably the ponies are down by him right around the corner. Bet you he's been down there. And his Bob Baffert Medina Spirit story is just so captivating for me. It's such a greasy industry. Like, it's so shady. And yet it's shady at the highest level, right? Like, you expect it at, like, a dump racetrack in the middle of nowhere. You know it's shady. You know it's happening.
And what about the horse being accused of cancel culture on the horse? The poor horse is just trying to live horse life, man. Like, I don't know what the deal with the horse life is, but I'm pretty sure when the horse was growing up, he's like, I don't want to be involved in cancel culture talk from Bobby Bat. Like, come
Crazy.
On.
Leave that to Twitter, okay? That's where cancel culture lives. Let people argue over the merits of it all.
Yeah, but I'm a horse,
I'm
and I don't want to be. Yeah, I'm a horse.
Yeah, I just want to go for a trot, man. Like, they told me to run, so I ran, and I won. What do you want out of me?
Yeah, I have a coil in the field, and I'm all good. I don't want much more than that.
No. Even the horses' eating practices are coming into question, like eating urine that happened to be on the hay. You know, like, what kind of slob is this Medina Spirit? Taking PEDs, potentially eating contaminated urine hay. I mean, that if that was my reputation, I'd probably take umbrage with that.
Dude, I'm not an Olympic drug tester. I'm not an Olympic drug tester for animals, but how could there be enough of a sample on a dude's urine that was on the hay into an animal that size?
There can't be, and there won't be, and that's the whole point of it. That's what it comes down to, and that's why Bob Baffert's been kicked out of Churchill Downs. He's been banned from running any races there. I don't know if that's a lifetime ban or just a, you know, semi-permanent one moving forward here. But they're at the Preakness this weekend. Like, the second leg of the Triple Crown is upcoming, and Medina Spirit's on his way down there. You're going to have a protest. Medina Spirit, the horse, is going to be trotting around outside the Preakness, you know, and trying to get in. So cancel culture, protesting, there's a lot going on with this horse. And probably the horse doesn't even know what the hell's happening right now.
Could you imagine there was protesters there with signs? Like,
I can't imagine.
Like, I'm going down, you know, with all of that's going on in the world today. Like,
absolutely.
I'm drawing up the signs in my basement here with the markers. I'm going down to the Preakness, and I'm going to picket the line there. If that horse even shows its ugly face,
that's the breaking point. Look at what's happened in this world the last 14 months.
Yeah.
And that's the breaking point where you're like, I got to hit the streets here, man. I got to go pick it. I can't allow this to happen. I cannot allow Medina Spirit to run in the Preakness. It cannot happen. It will not happen. It better not happen.
Right.
I guess that's up to the state, you know, the state of Maryland and, you know, the Preakness and what they're going to do there. But anyway, so Al's brother coming up. Colt Nost will join us here, who's a golf analyst, got a really cool podcast, longtime member of the PGA Tour. And McIlroy, I mean, full credit to him. He has not won since 2019, which is not like that. It's not like it's been 15 years.
For him, it's a long time.
It's a long time. And in 19, he had a great year. I believe he won the PGA Tour Player of the Year that year. That's when he won the Canadian Open. He won the Tour Championship, the Player Championship, the WGC event. Like, he had an unbelievable season. But he's been lost. You know, those are his words, not mine, in terms of his swing, in terms of his mechanics, in terms of his confidence. And he started from behind yesterday, but he found a way to win. And the one thing I was thinking of when I'm watching Keith Mitchell is no one wins wearing a visor on the PGA Tour.
Dude, he's my buddy. Don't talk about the – I like that visor. I dig it. Doesn't
you,
he look
you don't
like
win with
old,
a visor, though. Who was the last old guy? Like Phil in 2003. Who was the last guy to wear a visor and win on the PGA Tour?
It's a great question. I should know it. I don't remember, to be honest with you.
I honestly think we're talking 15 years plus. And that's all I could think of. I'm like, come on, Keith. Like, just fire on a flat brim and go out and win this sucker, because it doesn't usually happen. All right, here's Colt Knost from, again, longtime member of the PGA Tour. He's got a really cool podcast out, and he's always cruising out there. He had great analysis work all weekend, and he joins us now on Overdrive. How you doing, Colt?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Colt, before we get into Rory and visor wearing, by the way, Hayes, the answer is Bubba Watson. He wore a
That's
visor.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
Colt, before we get to
chime in with that.
Bubba's the only guy, right? Bubba's the only guy that wins with a visor. Okay, shout out to Bubba. There you go.
Before we get to the quality golfers, we want to know, our boy Harry Higgs hit a shot the other day, and I want to know the kind of language that's exchanged from the caddy to a player when you pull out furniture from the rough and you hit it 100 yards left of the green, it goes over the grandstand. What kind of back and forth is going on between the player and the caddy on the way to that golf ball? And have you ever done that?
Oh, I think we've all done it. Now, I've never been where he was. I saw where he ended up, but, you know, he's got his brother Al on the bag. So I'm sure there were some interesting words exchanged, but I know that Al is not afraid to give it right back to Harry. So I don't know exactly what the dialogue was, but we've all hit it in these crazy spots. If you've played out there long enough, you've definitely had to move the gallery. You've had to take drops from, you know, places you never even thought you would be. But I thought it was funny. Harry handled it beautifully. I loved my favorite part of that was when his group was already finished. They were already on number one, I think, and he just took the pin out, threw it on the ground, knocked it in, and then waved to the crowd. It was beautiful, and he's a beautiful human.
Yeah, he is definitely our go-to guy. Like we had him on the show, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago, and he was just an awesome interview. He handles it well. Social media, we posted the clip of us kind of laughing, quite frankly, about that shot. And he quote tweets it, and he has a great line about it. Yeah. I mean, he seems to kind of get it, quote-unquote, Harry Higgs.
Yes, he really, really does. He's a man of the people. I mean, off the golf course, he's as goofy and funny as they come. And then on the course, I mean, he takes it serious, but he still likes to have a good time. He's got some game. And he's a kid who played at SMU in Dallas and wasn't a star player by any means and has just continued to get better and better, and he's starting to embrace this kind of brand he has going.
So Rory pulls it out yesterday. Someone that I know or may not know picked him as his selection to win the golf tournament. How does this happen where a few weeks ago, this guy could not put the golf ball on the planet and he shows up? I know he's won at Quail Hollow before, but is that just how much better the top-end guys are, Colt, than the rest of them, where they just can dial it in and win?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that this morning. It's like, you know, there's people going through slumps. I mean, you mentioned like Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, who fall up to like 90th in the world. I mean, Rory McIlroy's in the slump, as people say, and he's 15th in the world. Like, I mean, he's still an elite player. He's just been in a little bit of funk and not playing the golf we're used to. But this is how simple it can change. I mean, he's been working with Pete Cowan the last couple months. But you go to a place you love, and it just seems like no matter how your form is, you show up and you start getting those feelings back, your confidence rises. And you go out and you play some great golf. And I think that's what happened with Roy. Like, listen, his golf swing still wasn't where he wants it to be. He didn't drive it the way he wanted to drive it. I believe he only hit like 19 fairways for the week, which is a crazy low number. But at the end of the day, he got it done. And there's just something about that place that he loves. I mean, it's the only place he's ever won 3 times in his career. So, and that was a cool moment yesterday. I mean, he was, obviously the fans were pulling hard for him. I was out there. I had him the first 5 holes, I guess, yesterday, and I mean, he was relaxed, he was enjoying the energy, and it was cool to see. There's not many better out on the PGA Tour than Rory McIlroy.
What did you make of the decision on 18? Like, was could he not have gotten a wedge on that to just chip it out 10 yards into the fairway, or was it that bad to take a drop there? I found that a little bit confusing.
Yeah, I wasn't there, obviously, so I couldn't. It's hard for me to say when I'm not right next to the golf ball, but I immediately, when he walked in and he had that kind of funky stance where his right foot was way up and he was trying to pitch it out, I was like, I don't like this. My immediate thought was, let's go left and then just try to wedge it on and make five and get out of here. But obviously he thought, you know, the lie was so bad inside that penalty area line that he didn't know if he could even get it out going left. And so that's when Harry Diamond stepped in and I thought made a great call. He's like, why don't we just drop this thing and try to make five this way? And obviously Rory agreed, but I mean, that shot, that was, ball below your feet with, it didn't look like the greatest lie in the world. And hit 8-iron from 195 yards. That was a heck of a shot.
Yeah, that was an incredible shot. And that's what he was doing. That's what he was doing all weekend. Just finding a way to throw it on the green, and he was putting really well. And I mean, we've had Brad Faxon on a bunch, and Brad's been pumping his tires because they're working together. But ultimately, you know, more often than not, this is not shocking news, Colt. Like, you start rolling putts, man, you're back, right? Like, if you have a game tee to green like Rory does, like Spieth does, like a bunch of other guys who are capable of playing and scrambling and know what it takes to win on Sunday, generally it comes down to, are you going to roll putts? And McIlroy did that, and he said afterwards he was feeling good. And you mentioned how much he loves Quail Hollow. He loves Kiowa Island as well. I mean, he lapped the field back in 2012. What does this mean for Rory's, you know, ranking status in terms of gambling in a couple of weeks once we get to the PGA?
Well, from what I've seen, I mean, he's moved to the top of the board. He's either the favorite or the co-favorite, wherever you look. But that's it. With Rory McIlroy, I mean, he's an elite ball striker. I know he's been a little bit off this year, but, I mean, he's in that top five guys in terms of how they hit it out there. And with him, if he putts average, if he doesn't lose strokes to the field putting, he's going to be a factor. And you mentioned, you know, 2012, he won by 8 at Kiowa. In my opinion, it's going to be much different conditions. I have not looked at the weather, so I'm hoping there's no rain. But with it being in May, it should be quite a bit firmer. It should be windier, which makes that place extremely difficult. If the wind blows there, that place can be as hard as any place in the world.
Backing up to Friday, or what would it have been? Maybe it was Saturday. The whole DeChambeau breakdown, it almost, you get the sense looking at it where he just did it for the story almost. I don't know. What did you make of the story? He flew home and then he had to get a work. He couldn't just fly back. He had to get the workout in at 2:45 in the morning. And then he flew back. Just that whole transaction, Colt.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. I had mixed thoughts on that when it first happened. Like, we were on the broadcast, and I was telling, like, Badar, that can someone find out? Because Bryson can run a little hot. And so my first thought was it wouldn't one bit surprise me if he at some point got in the air. Because I think he was T90 when he finished. And I can see him just saying, guys, I'm out of here, fired up, let's get out of here early. And then obviously the wind started blowing like crazy and the scores went down. Now, he obviously claims he made it all the way to Dallas, but with, you know, with those private flights, you know, a crew can only fly for a certain amount of time, so they struggled finding a crew that could get him all the way back to Charlotte, so he had to chill for a while and fly out at 2:45 in the morning. I have no idea why he left. I don't understand why he couldn't just sit around and wait a couple hours and see maybe if something, because we all knew the wind was going to blow like crazy. I don't know why he couldn't just wait a little bit and maybe see if he was moving in the right direction, but hey, he got in the air, wasted some money, flew home, got a workout in, and came back.
Yeah, and ended up making money, and I'm not sure what it means for him, though. I mean, he seems like one of those guys, if he doesn't win, it's like, man, I could have been doing something else. You know, he picks up FedEx points, and he picks up cash. But, I mean, he played really well.
I think when you – yeah, and he made a double bogey on 18 Saturday and a bogey on 18 Sunday. I mean, he finished ninth. I mean, that's world ranking points, a lot of FedEx Cup points. I mean, he's making the Olympic teams really important to him, so I know that helps out. So, I mean, hey, at the end, tied for ninth after making the cut on the number is a pretty successful week.
Yeah, it's not bad. We're chatting with Colt Noyce from, you know, SiriusXM. He's got a cool podcast out, former PGA Tour pro. Dustin Johnson had to pull out of the Byron Nelson. He just announced that earlier today. He's out this weekend. And he got a lot of play on this show, on any show in sports throughout North America, saying nothing of a show like your own or the Golf Channel or whatever. I mean, he was the go-to guy post-COVID because of how well he played. And he went on a run that was like Tiger Woods-esque, you know, unprecedented. Like, he was just dominating and lapping the field. Now it feels like he's kind of come back to the pack a little bit. Does it feel like the window has closed on that Dustin Johnson dominance era where that was a six-month run and now we're kind of back to where we were prior to it, where he's still a great player, could win any week, but shouldn't be expected to win every week?
No, I don't think he should be expected to win every week. I don't think any player should. I think we get kind of wrapped up in comparing people to Tiger Woods, which just isn't fair to Tiger or to any player that's being compared to him, because it's not realistic. Dustin's the guy. I mean, he's a little streaky, but like, his streaks are going for several months at a time. I mean, you go back to last year where, you know, at the 3M and Memorial, I mean, he shot, I think, 80-80 at Memorial, and then went over and shot 78 at 3M and had to withdraw on Friday. He gets some little funks like that every once in a while. Right now, his putting is a little off. I was with him at Harbortown at the RBC, and there was just some things going on in his stroke that I don't think he's used to have happening. He switched putters. So I think he's just going to take an extra week to maybe dial that in for the PGA. I think he possibly looked at the weather this week in Dallas, and, you know, today, tomorrow, and Wednesday look horrible with rain and not that warm. So maybe he wasn't going to get very much prep. I mean, once the tournament starts, it's going to be great, but I just felt like he thought he was scrambling a little bit to prepare, and so he wanted to take the week off and get ready at home.
Colt, before we get you out of here, we live in Ontario, and I don't know if you're aware of our circumstances here, but are you aware that we're the only place in the world right now that you cannot tee it up?
I am aware. I feel very, very sad for y'all. I have no idea. Like, listen, there's some serious stuff going on in this world. I get it. But to not be able to go outside and to play golf is tragic. I got my vaccine this morning, so I'm just kind of waiting on this thing to knock me on my butt tonight and to see how I feel. But I feel terrible for you guys that y'all can't get out there and play golf. I mean, it's been the savior, I feel like, during this whole COVID crisis all around the world, is that you can still get outside, play golf, social distance and all that, and still at least enjoy your day a little bit.
No kidding.
That's
well
the truth,
said.
Man. That's absolutely the truth. But the powers that be apparently don't see it that way for whatever reason. Sooner than later, we'll be out there. Great catching up with you, Colt. Really appreciate you doing this, man. We'll do it again down the road.
You got it. Have a great day, guys.
You got it. Colt Knost from SiriusXM. He's got a podcast out, former PGA Tour pro, and yeah, that's the truth. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but golf has never it's never meant more to me than ever before in my life. I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, being out last year, playing, even the two rounds I got in this year before they shut it down.
Wow,
like,
and he said it's our savior for just getting out and
get
doing
out of the
something.
House. We it work is. From home. We work in the basement, you know.
I don't golf, but I can tell how much it's hurt. And I know there's bigger things to worry about, but, you know, when you just look at individually, like, people use certain things to blow off steam, for their mental health, for their exercise, all of these things. And my group, including both of you and Jeff McDonald and the Grappler, like, that's your thing. That's always been your thing. And when it's taken away from you, the level of frustration has risen, obviously. That's me on the outside. Like,
yeah, no, exactly. And listen, I think that applies to people that play tennis. It applies.
Right.
We've all got young kids that want to take part in activities, and I think it's in their best interest to get outside and play. And it's the only place in the world. Apparently, Doug Ford has it figured out. Unlike everyone else on Earth that runs government, Doug Ford has it figured out. And it sounds like they might extend it, which. If it happens, you know, there's not much, obviously, we can do about it. You can yell and scream. People are complaining. People are being – and it's not even about a complaint. It's like pleading, which should never be the case. Pleading.
Dude, I said it last week, how pathetic it is. It's pathetic that my dad, who is trying to enjoy retirement, is trying to get his buddies together and go to Quebec to tee it up. Like, how pathetic is that?
I know. Well,
road trip to Quebec to tee it?
That's where we're at. Well, I don't even know if you can cross the border. It's confusing to follow.
I know.
What's allowed and what isn't.
Yeah.
I know. But anyway, we'll keep you up to date on that as we move forward. Is this it for you, O? I'm confused at what's going on here. Are you?
Yeah, it is. I have affairs, personal affairs.
Personal affairs. Okay.
He's got a briefcase right there. He's ready to go.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to miss out on Al's Brothers Power Rankings, though.
I know. I want a quick update. Tomorrow. I guarantee one of you are going to lose it on him because you're not going to agree. And my second bet, My second bet is Ohtani is on the list.
Okay.
Really?
Top seven most dominant athletes in team sports.
Yeah,
today.
And before I go, I want to know, like, where is our money status at?
Are you
trying to tell me that I actually owe you a hunch now?
You're in the hole a hunch.
Oh, my God.
Because this is
okay,
what happens.
Well, hang on. Here's what you have to do. Al's brother is aware of the goings-on in the wintertime where we rinsed you. So I'd like the breakdown of how you chiseled away at it.
I'll explain it to you. I can give it to you right now if you want.
Go ahead.
Yeah. For start, you were up. You were up significant amounts of money.
Okay, can you actually pull a Dougie Ford where you lift a piece of paper up and show me a graph?
Well, here's how – not this far removed. I was keeping track of it for a long time.
This is where it becomes hard to believe.
Well, here's the issue that we ran into because I believe the championship weekend, I want to say I went 2-0 that weekend. I believe I had the Chiefs over the Bills, and I remember – Al's brother took the Packers, I believe, and I took Brady and the Bucks, remember? So I believe I went 2-0 there, and then I put $200 down on the Super Bowl. I had Tampa. I won that. So that, I believe, brought it back down to you were plus 200 at that point. You were up 200. I won the Masters pool, and I thought we put 200 on that. Maybe we only put 100. So maybe we're even. I'll give you that if you want.
Well, but where does your boy Berger come into play?
Berger was a part of it too. So, like this, I just keep coming up with winning bets. When have you won a bet? You haven't won a bet in a long time.
I'll just leave it at this. I might be able to sign off on you being up one hunch, but it will not go any farther than that. And I'll talk to Al's brother because he would know.
Here's what I'll allow you to do. Because I'm a sportsman, because I'm a good guy, even starting now, even though I think I'm flushing money down the toilet.
No, I'll give you a hunch. I'm down a hunch. I'll admit that. I'm down a hunch. But okay. I'll make you a play. I'm down a hunch. But I automatically get Rory at Kiowa.
Wow.
All of a sudden, Rory's like the hottest thing in the world. Right. I would take a step back. I think you're going to pass that 100 back. Like,
okay.
That's a one-off for Rory.
I'll give you that. Because are we taking players at the Byron Nelson, I would assume. Are we playing?
Oh, we are. And okay. I can maybe give you the first. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Is Rory is mine.
I'll give you Rory at Kiowa. Although I really like him at Kiowa Island.
I know. So
I love him there. All right. Well, we'll settle this score and we'll figure it out.
And by the way, before Al's brother starts his segment, I ask him where he thinks the money's at.
Yeah, I'll try to get a read on Al's brother. He'll remember the football back and forth better than I will.
Yeah.
Like I was in the hole, but I chipped away because remember, I remember leaving the Super Bowl down 200. Because I was going to put down – I was going to double or nothing it, and I'm like, yeah, I'll split it in half, see where I'm at. And I won that because I know you guys had the pick. Al's brother jumped, and he took Kansas City, and I had the Bucks. So I remember that, and then I know I won the Masters. I won with Berger, just won with McIlroy. I mean, you start doing the math, and it starts to get a little bit carried away.
It's 100. It's 100.
It starts to really move in the wrong direction. But anyway, we'll ask Al's brother. We'll get to his power rankings. We'll see you tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
La troisième étoile du match ce soir, the third star, le frère d'Al.
What a spectacular intro. I mean, we've put together some great ones. Mullen has put together some great ones over the years, but Al's brother, I think you hold the title, man. That is my favorite intro. That's saying something, dude. We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
Are you passionate about your intro? Do you like your intro? How do you feel about it?
Well, it just keeps adding elements to it, and that's what's so great, right? It kind of just started off with the horn. Remember the siren, the Al's brother siren?
Yep.
I would come in, we would make picks, and then all of a sudden Stone Cold got brought into it, and then now we got the Pierre LeBrun. I think there's one where it's got like something to do with that commercial I did for the Super Bowl. I don't remember, but he stuck one in there at one point. That was another funny little addition. So it just keeps evolving. It's great.
I love it. It's great. And Al's brother's power rankings are brought to you by our friends at Doer, the world's most comfortable pants. Shop online at doer.ca/TO and use the promo code TSN1050 to save 15%. Check it out, doer.ca/TO, and use code TSN1050 to save 15%. So Al's brother, you've been known for your All-Canadian North Division power rankings. We've been doing this for quite some time, And we're going to step outside the box here a little bit, but still in your comfort zone. You're a man of many hats, and you love sports in general. You love hockey, but you love football, basketball, baseball. You watch it all. Yep. You follow it all. So I think you're the perfect guy to go to here, because we came across this topic earlier today, the idea that maybe Connor McDavid is the most dominant pro athlete in team sports, period. You know, a lot of times I find we've got somewhat of an insecurity up here, and it's almost as if Canadians are like, well, we can't say that because that can't be true, or it's going to make us sound as if we're only into hockey or whatever. But he's that good. He's that dominant.
Yes.
He very well could be. Bunch of names that could be out there. Trout, Mahomes, LeBron. So we're going right to the source. You're going to start from 7 down to 1, and you're going to list the most dominant athletes in team sports today. Does that sound about right or what?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do today, the most dominant athletes. And this was a kind of a difficult list to do because there's so many great athletes out there. And it wasn't so much coming up with the top seven that was hard, but it was actually power ranking them, where it's like, oh, but this guy's so good, but so is this guy. And like, this, he led the league. These are just seven amazing. And honestly, any one of these seven players, you could probably make the argument to be at the top. But this is how I have them laid out, and I'm going to explain why.
I love it. Okay. All right. Sounds good. You ready, Noodles, or what?
I'm ready to rock. I think this is – I'm so fired up for this one.
I want to see where he's got – I have certain players in my mind, and I'm like, I need to know where he has them listed.
Right.
Who do you have at number 7 on the power rankings this week?
I've got LeBron James coming in at number 7. Not as high as you probably thought I would, but, like, let's face it, it's not that he's taken a step back, but he's just not the most dominating player in the NBA anymore. And you guys kind of touched on it earlier, kind of stole my thunder a bit. But you know what? I think that LeBron James is still, like, one of the best players of all time. But at this point, he's not, like, a lock for MVP every year. He's not the number one player. And I think for that reason, I wasn't ready to kind of put him into, like, that elite status that some of these other players in other sports are considered the top guy of their craft.
Yeah, I can't argue that. I mean, he's still, before he went down, he may have been the MVP. Like, he was making a compelling case. I think he was arguably the favorite or close to it in Vegas. Last year, he finished 2nd in MVP voting, gets to the NBA Finals, does what he does. So I always, like, LeBron is a guy that deserves the respect, but I think you actually have him appropriately listed. I mean, I even said off the cuff earlier, is he still in the top 7?
If this was, like, 3, 4, 5 years ago, he's number one.
He's number one.
No doubt. No doubt he's number one. But he's, what, 36 now?
Yep.
Something like that? 36, 37. Like, he's getting up there in age, and he's starting to wither a little bit. He's still a top 3 player. He's, like, in that Crosby territory where it's like he still is, like, one of the greatest of all time and still in the conversation for best playing the game right now. But there's some other guys in that conversation.
That's it, man. You drag in these other sports and –
You're right. The injury, too, though. The injury, like, if he would have had a season where he is going to be the MVP, I think he's a little higher on the list just because of his legacy, and he's still doing it at that age. It's almost the Aaron Rodgers argument, you know, like that at that age and still doing it. Like, that's why but I think he's appropriately. Like, I think 7's fine.
I think
there's
okay.
other guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, that still says something about a guy who's been in the league this long, and we're talking about North American athletes, and he's still in the top 7. I mean, I don't think that's throwing shade at LeBron.
No.
All right, who do you have at number 6?
Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, coming in at number 6. Clearly, he's the best quarterback in the NFL. He can make the stupidest throws. Eyes closed, off 1 foot, hopping, throwing backwards. It doesn't matter. He'll chuck it 60 yards on a rope.
But we got ourselves a problem here.
Yeah,
I'll tell you why. Here's the thing with Patrick Mahomes, and we saw it happen in the Super Bowl. He can't do it by himself. As dominant as he is, he cannot do it by himself. And that's kind of the argument just in football in general. It is the ultimate team sport. So Patrick Mahomes, when he doesn't have an offensive line blocking for him, he can't show off that dominating elite talent. So for that reason, I just couldn't have him up high enough on my rankings because he needs a little bit more help to be the physical dominant player that he is.
I hear you, Al's brother, but you're talking about a guy who – He won MVP and went to the championship game
MVPs.
That year. No, I understand that, but you're saying like he doesn't have enough around him. It's not like they're a 4-12 team. They've been to the Super Bowl back-to-back years.
I'm not saying it has enough around. Like I said, you could make a any of these guys could be number one, right? But in terms of Patrick Mahomes, when it comes to being the dominant guy, like as an individual, there needs to be a little bit more to prop him up than these other players I have higher up on the list.
Okay. This right. one, I can't wait to see who's ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, I could think of two guys for sure, but Okay. All right. We're into number five. This is Al's Brothers Power Rankings. We're ranking the top North American team sports athletes. So the best athletes going in team sports today throughout the continent. Al's brother into the top five. Who do you have at number five?
I got Steph Curry coming in at number five. He's the most unguardable player. It is. He's the most unguardable player in the league right now.
He's not ahead of Mahomes.
How like, isn't he ahead of Mahomes?
He's not ahead of Mahomes in terms of his sport, in terms of dominance. You can't say Mahomes is clear-cut best quarterback going and then bring in Curry, who Jokic is better than him right now.
But if you put Mahomes on a team, like let's say you put him on the Jets, is Mahomes going to do Mahomes-like things? Whereas if you put Curry on the worst team in the NBA...
He was on it last year. They were the worst team in the NBA.
And he was still
terrible.
Unbelievable, hitting every single shot imaginable. And he got hurt, too. That didn't help for it. The reason why they were the worst team. He didn't play half the season. But even though, still, you take Klay Thompson out of the conversation, you take Kevin Durant out of the conversation, Draymond Green isn't anywhere near what he used to be, and he's still putting up disgusting numbers.
He's still a great
player. Leads the NBA in points, 31.9. Probably going to win the MVP this year. Between him and Jokic.
Jokic is going to win
it. Yeah, Jokic could win it. But he's just so unguardable, and that's, to me, what makes him so dominating in his sport.
Right. Here's the thing about this conversation. You tell me if I'm wrong here, Noodles. Because it's not, I'm not here to attack these great players. Curry's
well, you are.
A superstar.
But, no, you're here to attack Al's brother.
To attack the rankings.
Right. This is it. But fine, though. Tell me. Fill me in, please.
Well, that's all I'm saying. Like, Curry, I love Curry as a player. I'm not disputing what he's doing this year. They're in eighth place, Al's brother. Right, like he's not dragging them to a 58-win season here. Well, I guess it's impossible, really, so much with a 72-game season. But you know what I'm saying? Like prorated over a full year. This is not as if he is dragging them the way LeBron even drags a bad team even further up the standings. Curry's having a spectacular year. I can't reason with him ahead of Patrick Mahomes.
Well,
I cannot. Here's
my logical. Like, he's not going to win the MVP of the league. So how if you're not going to win the MVP of the league, how are you on this list? You know, if you're the best player
I don't
in
think
your
he's,
sport.
I'll bet you Al's brother doesn't have Jokic in the top four.
No, I don't. I don't have Jokic in the top four.
He's not going to have Jokic in the top four.
That would be my only argument is if you're the best player in your sport, you probably take home the MVP in that sport.
Well, Jokic, I think, will be this year. Furthermore, now Giannis is not having as crazy of a year. He just won back-to-back MVPs, and he's still in his mid-20s. And I'm assuming you don't have Giannis on this list. So, okay, Al's brother.
Okay, it's your list, buddy.
He's a dominating specimen where when he's out there on the floor, he's a threat to score anytime the ball's in his hands. Mm-hmm. That's not the same for a lot of these other guys. And the thing with basketball is different, but at the end of the day, the number one thing you have to try and do is put the ball in the hoop, and there's nobody in the league that does that better than Steph Curry.
Okay, I like it. I don't love it, but I appreciate it. Steph Curry
we appreciate.
Five. We're ranking the best pro athletes today in North American team sports. Into the top four. Who do you have at number four?
I've got Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle for the L.A. Rams. You know, he is the most dominant player in the NFL. I think 2 years ago he was rated the number one player. And as a defensive tackle, that is the most unsexiest, outside of an offensive lineman, probably the most unsexiest position there is in football. Yet he demands the respect and is widely known as the best defensive player in all of football. The four defensive player of the year trophies will tell you that. But also, this guy just wreaks havoc wherever he's playing. He's the most dominant. He's so disruptive. And the difference between him and Mahomes, and this was kind of why it was so difficult to do these rankings. He doesn't need anybody else around him to be the most dominant player at his position, whereas Mahomes does need a little bit of help.
Okay. Well, you're not wrong in terms of – I mean, I guess if he's got some help on the outside, you might argue that there's only so much an offense can do in terms of trying to game plan against him, but he gets doubled all the time. You saw it in that Rams game, the divisional game at Green Bay, when he was injured. He didn't play enough snaps, and he really wasn't that effective, and the whole team crumbled because of it. I can't argue with this. I mean, Aaron Donald is as dominant of a pro athlete as you're going to see right now. And it's difficult to really analyze because the position is so unique to your point. But he's a monster, man. He's an absolute monster. So you're not going to get an argument out of me on that one, Al's brother.
Well, there is a NFL's version of WAR. It's called approximate value. I'm not too exactly sure how it's calculated, but he led the entire NFL in this stat. So
yeah.
You know, the analytics.
He's put himself in the position of being considered maybe the greatest defensive tackle of all time.
Oh, easy.
Already
easy.
Probably is there. And yeah, he might be the most dominant defensive player of the past 15 years. You know, that's how good he is. So, okay, you got Aaron Donald at 4. I like it. We're into the top 3 here, ranking the best current athletes in North American team sports. Who do you have at number 3, Al's brother?
Here's a name that maybe doesn't get as much plug up here in Canada because of the sport, but Jacob DeGrom. Yeah. This guy, what he is doing in Major League Baseball is how silly he's making hitters this season is just disgusting. Leads the MLB with a .68 ERA, a 1.03 FIP, 600 WHIP, 3.2 hits per nine, 14.6 K per nine. He's only allowed 3 runs in 40 innings this season. 3 earned runs through 40 innings. Nate Pearson gave that up in a couple innings the other day.
He's done so good. Cool.
Like,
he's
it's
so
just good. Hitters can't hit this guy.
Yep.
He's unhittable, and it's been now 3-4 years in a row that he's been this way. So the consistency is also there.
Yep. No, I was hoping you wouldn't forget him. We had someone write that in before because we were just listing off guys off the top of our head. Someone said, if you don't have DeGrom on here,
what are you
Al's
doing?
Brother has to be banned for life. And he came out of the game over the weekend. He had an MRI. It came back clean, but they placed him on the IL today.
Saw that.
That's not good for the Mets. But
the crazy part is, too, with all those stats, he's 3-2. Like, he doesn't even have a ridiculous winning record because the team stinks and can't hit.
They never score runs.
No.
When he won the Cy Young a couple of years ago, it was, like, actually a joke. Like, he'd go into the ninth, and it'd be 1-0 for the opposition. You're like, this guy's going to get an L, and he's giving up 3 hits.
Wow. Like, a 500 record as the best pitcher in baseball. It's just a waste.
That's the hardest thing is, you know, pitcher as opposed to hitter.
Yep.
Right? That's the thing. You know,
it's like Donald and Mahomes, like a defense, offense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it does not – it makes it complicated, but
– I'm just wondering if Trout still gets a sniff on that.
I think we're into the top 2, and I have to know – I'd be shocked if we don't know who we're dealing with here with Al's brother's power rankings. It's just a debate about who's going to be number 1 and who's going to be number 2.
So do I go straight to 1 here then?
That might – I don't know if that's going to throw Megan off up on TV, but if we could pull that off, then I think that's probably what we should do here, Al's brother, because we know it's going to be either Mike Trout or Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Like, the cat's out of the bag. It's one of those 2 guys. Let's go right to number 1.
Okay.
All right, let's go right to number 1. Al's brother, you make the announcement. This is your number 1 pro athlete in team sports today. Who do you have at number 1?
The most dominating player in North American team sports today is Mike Trout.
Wow.
Mike Trout. It is Mike Trout. And I know, Connor McDavid, you've been pumping the tires about him all. It's close. It's seriously close, which is only like a testament to how much of an amazing season McDavid had. Because for the last 5 years, I think Mike Trout's probably number 1 on this list, and you're not even batting an eye. But I still think Mike Trout, like, he may be the best player of all time when it comes to it.
Do we have that sound drop of the dad who goes, "You are a hater"?
LeVar Ball.
LeVar Ball.
You are a hater.
Yeah, like, I feel like we were all just penciled. I was already writing in
McDavid.
Like, I was like writing my list, and I'm like, okay, it's just McDavid. And then all of a sudden, hater over here goes,
"You are a hater."
There you are, Al's brother. Just trying to throw us off, playing the contrarian.
Contrarian, I mean, Trout is.
I don't think
he's ridiculous. I don't think he's outrageously good.
I think it's a coin flip, McDavid or Trout. I think you could pick your poison. You can't go wrong. You went with Trout. I'm not going to yell and scream about that. I mean, to your point, Al's brother, when you consider where he's at. Now, this is as of, like, today, tonight, we're going into a game tonight.
Yeah.
But the statistics he's putting up, like wins above replacement, which is a relatively modern stat, but it applies to the sport because the sport has not changed that much over the course of time.
Right.
This guy is passing, like, with every game. He's collecting more WAR. He's passing, like, DiMaggio, and he's passing, like, Williams. Like, we're talking the best of the best, and the guy's 29 years old.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you're not wrong. It doesn't feel like a comfortable statement to make, and it feels like you're just – it's too modern, it's too recent, it's too my era's the best. But I wouldn't be shocked if when all is said and done in 10 or 15 years, people look at Trout and say he's right there with Ruth, he's right there with, you know, whoever it is, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays.
And he's
like,
complete.
The best of the best.
He's complete too, right? Like he hits with power. He steals bases. Like he plays well defensively. He's got speed. Like he's just the most complete player. And when you look at the difference between Trout and McDavid, I think you look at how much McDavid is just lapping the rest of the NHL, right? And that's a big reason why I think Connor gets this, you know, why he's up there as one of the most dominant players. But like Mike Trout, in a year where hitting is down lower than it's been in like recent memory, hitters are hitting .234 this year. Trout's batting .376, hasn't missed a beat.
Well, like, you're right. Could you imagine if Trout played for the Yankees?
His you know what I mean? Would be crazy.
He would be Babe Ruth already.
Right. If he played for a team that had so much shine on them, like, you know, McDavid in Edmonton. I'm from Edmonton. Like, there's a lot of history with the Oilers because of the Cups in the 80s, but, you know, Edmonton's a smaller market compared to Toronto, New York, Boston, original six teams.
Yep.
Like, just like Trout is, you know, he's kind of hidden in California. You want to watch him, you're usually starting at 10 o'clock at night out east here. You know,
yeah,
later.
Well, that's it. And that's what they're in a similar spot, I guess, in a way. Right.
Wider markets, right?
Yeah, just and the time zone. Like, I know the people on the West Coast never want to hear this, but it's just the numbers, man. You can't fight the data. A large portion of the country on both sides of the border live on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a lot of the conversation is driven in this country, in this city, and in New York, south of the border. And Mike Trout's, you know, first pitch 10:37 p.m. You're just not going to get it on the, you know, talk shows in New York and Boston and Philly and Atlanta and Miami, up and down the coast.
Right.
And the same thing applies up here. So,
yep.
You know, I can't argue Trout 1, McDavid 2. Right? I might flip it, but I might tomorrow wake up and flip it back. You know, like it really is a coin toss, and it's a testament to how great both guys are.
100%. Wow. And I think in terms of McDavid, like if he continues what he's done this year for another 2-3 years, like if he comes out next year and puts up a .150 and the rest of the league is only still trying to hit 120 and he's lapped them just like he did this year, like then you can obviously say like, okay, it wasn't just because he was playing against Canada, because that's been the argument all year long when it comes to McDavid, right? Is he only putting this up because he's in a weaker division with bad goaltending, the offense is up within this division, and there's a bunch of haters out there trying to say that what he's doing is special, but he wouldn't be doing this if he was in a regular season. I'm not one of those that subscribe to that notion, but if you really want to solidify himself as the most dominant player, if he can do what he's done this year, next season, then I think that he could definitely leapfrog Mike Trout in my rankings.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if, like, has he set the bar so high here, where I feel like next year the pace that people are going to look at is how many points does he need, how many points does he get in 53 games, how many games does it take to get to 100 points, you know, like he's kind of changed his own barometer in terms of trying to determine how well he's playing.
Yeah.
You know, like, what if next year it takes him 62 games to get to 100 points? That's still a remarkable pace. It'll be faster than anyone else in the league. I guarantee you that.
Right.
But it'll be, it's 9 games slower. You know, he's missed missing a beat.
Well, then people will just say, the North Division was weaker. You know what I mean? There's going to be an excuse about that. I would just love to see a full season. I talked about it yesterday, and I know we got to go, but Matthews in a full season, what can he get for goals?
Yep.
McDavid, in a full season, you know, health-wise, what can you get for points? This is modern day. Love to see one guy get 60, love to see another guy get 150 points. It'd be cool.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely, it would be. And you know what, as someone points out here, Rossi points out before we fly, none of these top three, Trout, McDavid, DeGrom, have any playoff success.
No.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily their fault. It's the, you know, the Angels never get – Mike Trout's played 3 playoff games. DeGrom never makes the playoffs. And McDavid's made it once. Last year didn't even really count.
This year.
Won a playoff round.
McDavid's won one playoff round.
I believe. Yeah, one or two. I can't remember.
No, they won one. Then they lost to Anaheim in the second round. They got jobbed by the refs. I remember that clearly.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Anyway, Al's brother, great stuff, buddy.
Thank you.
Way to work, bud.
Stick around. I'll get you to answer the whole betting thing if you can recall. I don't. Now O's sending text claiming outrageous statistics and
is that what was going off in my pocket? I had some buzzing
going off. Apparently he's got affairs, but he can still figure this out.
Gotcha.
So we'll try to get an answer on that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so Steve Simmons just posted a story. I guess he caught up with Larry Tannenbaum and was asked about the Masai negotiations. And Tannenbaum said to Simmons, quote, "Masai and I agreed months ago that we would sit down after the season has concluded to address his contract. We are both confident in that approach, and Masai has shared that publicly in the past when asked about it." So Tannenbaum is, I guess, putting forth a front of confidence and claiming that there's no reason, I guess, not to believe him, that this has always been the plan, and he'll sit down with Masai when the season's over. So more on that tomorrow. Al's brother, you're still in there. Do you remember the debt situation? Like, I think I have it right.
Based on your last text, however, we did win the NFC Championship game. So I think we were up 300 or 200 going into the Super Bowl. And then from there, I think we were still up 2 after the Super Bowl, right?
That's my understanding.
And then 100, 100, 100. So I think you might be up 1.
Okay. So you were on the Bucks in the NFC Championship game?
Yeah, we stuck you with your pack, and they lost.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that would be it. They definitely did lose.
Go back on the tape. That's all it is. Yeah,
well, I went and checked out the Al's Brothers Picks Twitter page just to make it easy because someone created that. And I just went back and looked. I was like, oh, yeah, look, we did take these people, blah, blah, blah. Right. So we finished with we were 2 games over 500 when all said and done, me and O, which would put us $200 up. And then if you rattled off $300 wins, then that would put us at 1.
There you go. That makes sense to me because I got Daniel Berger at Pebble. I've got Rory at Quail Hollow, and then I won the Masters pool. So we'll figure it out tomorrow. I'm sure O-Dog will have something to say about it. Good stuff, Al's brother. Looks like you're gearing up for TV noodles.
I am. I've had a malfunction with my microphone. We'll get to it. My son was playing with it. So
good luck.
I'm trying to unravel it. I'm live in 5 minutes, so it'll be all good. All right.
Say hi to Gino and the boys for us. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.